So welcome back to part two of episode two of Lab Tech. We are talking about the programmatic ecosystem and the technology that exists within it to try and help people kind of understand the difference between the legacy programmatic ad world and what we've built Alchemy. So we covered off the kind of constituent parts of the programmatic ad tech, going all the way from the publisher to the advertiser, kind of what the magic that happens in the middle. Even though it's kind of inefficient, it is a very amazing thing that happens. And I don't think people really kind of give it credit for the fact that all of that happens in such a short amount of time. And really the kind of purpose of selling advertising online, I think, is one thing that is understated. A lot of people get annoyed by ads because there's too many of them. They can be intrusive. They can move the page around whilst you're trying to read websites. But really, they help the publisher pay for that great content that they create. So I use the example of working at Condé Nast because they were, you know, one of the best publishers in the world, really, for the content they produced. It's very high quality. There's lots of different verticals that they would cover, and they need to pay journalists, essentially. That's true for kind of any content creator, whether it's some person on YouTube or whether it's, you know, a big corporation like that. They still need to get paid to be able to create that content. And I think that people kind of underestimate the value of free content. We've seen a sort of push towards subscriptions to try and make up the deficit that has been lost in that kind of ad tech scramble in the middle. But that hasn't really produced what publishers expected it to, because really you're asking people to pay for something that they used to get for free. So people just stopped going to those sites, which then meant they had less ad inventory to sell. So it kind of had a negative knock-on effect, really. So I guess that kind of brings us nicely to the purpose behind Alchemy. The kind of ethos that we have is to kind of simplify that ad tech programmatic ecosystem, simplify it, make it cheaper, make it more accessible, and really make sure that publishers get more of that revenue back.
Absolutely. And I think advertising is that essential evil, can I say, which actually funds the free content that people want to consume. So without advertising, there wouldn't be free content. All types of content would have to be paid content, and that's not what anybody wants. So there needs to be some way in which to monetize these the content, and that would be advertising. So as the popular saying in the world of advertising is, if you're not paying for something, then you are the product. And in the world of advertising, that holds true, because you are the product and you are being sold a certain advertised product. And your your value in that ecosystem, your ability to buy something or your likelihood to buy a product, is what is being monetized by the publisher and the various links in the supply chain.
Yeah, and I think even from a consumer point of view, advertising isn't a bad thing. If it wasn't for advertising, you wouldn't even know that your favorite products existed, probably. Or you might go to the shop and then you see 20 different types of orange juice and you don't know which one you want to buy because you haven't been advertised to tell you that, you know, this one's 100% actual fruit juice or whatever it might be. So I think there's always a place for advertising. Even within the sort of crypto space, we spend a lot of time having to advertise what we do to our audience, to make sure that kind of people understand what our ethos is and why we're doing what we're doing.
Absolutely. And that's not to say that the space is free from problems. There are a few concerns and issues that deal with legacy advertising. And one of the key concerns or issues that we have seen with digital advertising ecosystem today is the lack of transparency. And there is there's absolutely no visibility as to how much of money that is being spent by the advertiser is actually received by the publisher. What are the different links in the supply chain? How much of that ad spend or the money that is being spent by the advertiser is actually being taken by each of these links in the supply chain. And because there isn't enough visibility, or because there is this opaqueness, there is a certain tendency to hold back, withhold data, and not share data with other links in the supply chain. And that is leading to a very, very inefficient and redundant supply chain.
Yeah, we actually covered supply path optimization in a recent newsletter, so check it out. But essentially, if you're an advertiser, you want to know that as much of your money as possible is creating the reach that you want to hit the right audience that you want it to. And that's kind of what supply path optimization really is there to achieve, to make sure that the advertiser knows they're getting value for money. It doesn't necessarily have to just be the most adverts you can get for that amount of money, because there's no point in just spreading it around everywhere. A lot of the time you do want it to be targeted to certain people, and you might have to pay more for that audience or to be on that website or to be viewed at a certain, you know, tentpole moment, whether that's the September issue of Vogue, because that's when all the new kind of clothes come out, or whether it's during the Super Bowl, because, you know, there's lots of people watching. So for an advertiser, understanding that supply chain has become very difficult because of the kind of mess that we kind of spoke about before, or the amount of different people involved in that. So kind of how does that relate to what we've done at Alchemy? So if you think of the supply chain as it existed before, or currently in the legacy industry, compared to kind of what we're doing.
Right. So let's break this down into two parts. One is the optimizations that Alchemy has brought on the supply side, and the second on the demand side. I'll now concentrate on the supply side itself. Looking at the legacy supply chain, on the supply side, we had, and we've spoken about this in part one, is in the legacy ecosystem, we had the publishers, we had the SSPs, we had the ad networks, we had the curation platforms, all of which you can argue have their own values in the ecosystem. So now what we have done is to replace all of this and integrate the Alchemy Ad Exchange directly with the publisher using Prebid. And what that does is it eliminates a lot of inefficient links in the supply chain. By integrating directly with the publisher using Prebid, that is, the publisher would integrate with Alchemy Ad Exchange via Prebid. And what that would do is the auction that is conducted by Alchemy is sent directly to the publisher via Prebid, which can then choose to conduct a second level auction. But it eliminates a lot of inefficiencies on the supply side. And what it also achieves is, up until now in the legacy ecosystem, the publisher would have zero visibility of the value of their ad inventory. To add detail to that, when a publisher would send a bid request object, which provided details about an ad slot on their website, they would provide details of what was the format of the ad slot, what is the content type that is associated with that website, what is the format, what is the size, what is the segment that the user falls under, or the user's ID. So all of this information used to be sent to the ad exchange. But in a legacy system, they would only get one response. And as part of the bid request object, they would also say, this is the floor price that we are willing to accept for that particular ad slot. That is, any response below that floor price would be rejected by the publisher. So that's the minimum price that they would be willing to accept. Now, what would happen in return is that they would get one response, which would be above the floor price, which would say, here's the best response that we can find for you. That is what a legacy ad exchange would do. But what that would take away in terms of value is that the publisher would not know how many people were interested in buying that ad slot. What was the value of that ad slot? You get the highest value. But what was the second highest? What was the third highest? Was there a close competition between number one, number two, and number three? how do they perceive that particular ad slot? How do they perceive the value of an ad slot based on the content type that is sent along with it? What is the value of that ad slot based on the geography of the person who is accessing that content? What is the value based on the time of day, the location, the you know, there are various factors which the publisher would lose sight of just because of that opaqueness, just because there's a wall that is built between the publisher and everything behind the ad exchange. And that has now been removed. What Alchemy Ad Exchange does is it not only provides a supply path optimization on the supply side by eliminating any redundant links in the supply chain, it also provides 100% transparency and auditability. Not just transparency, because you can be transparent about data that is not true. So auditability is what will offer credibility to the data that you're being transparent about. And Alchemy Ad Exchange provides transparency and auditability to the publisher. So the publisher can now see for every ad slot at a particular time of day, targeting a particular user in a particular geography for a certain content type. What is the value of that ad slot? How many people bid were interested in buying that ad slot and showing their ad? What was the value of the response that was bid by each of these people? So that allows the publisher to then say, okay, at this point in, at this time of the day, maybe I can increase my flow bid price so as to make more money out of the available ad inventory. And they can also say, maybe I can retain the same flow bid price, but I can reduce the number of ad slots that I'm, the number of advertisements I'm showing on my website. So all of that is made possible by Alchemy Ad Exchange.
Yeah, I mean, that in itself is kind of a big change in what exists right now. And just to give a kind of example, a real world example of when I was working at Condé Nast, we would always be told about the bid density. So like where around, you know, certain parts of the site or whatever it might be, what the bid density was on that section for that ad unit. And the problem was, it was just, you put your floor price here. If you dropped it by 30%, you could make X more money. But a lot of the time, that's because the actual bid response is being weighed down by a few parties who bid basically a penny. So I think of companies like Criteo, for example, who are retargeting. So all they really want to do is get scale, but they will probably bid everywhere across the internet at around like 1 to 10 cents, regardless of like any information about that person, because all they're really trying to do is win the bid and then they'll find the ad to show to that person. So they don't really care whether it's premium inventory, whether it's long tail inventory, what the, you know, what that site is, anything about it. And the problem as a publisher is that you know that you are selling directly at a certain price. You know that you want to maintain a certain level, but the bid density doesn't necessarily show you anything. They just say, okay, well, really, the bid density is around 30 cents, so you should drop it to that. And it's like, well, I'm selling it at £8 right now. Like, why am I going to do that? It's like, well, yeah, but you'll get 100% sell-through rate. But 100% sell-through rate at 30 cents compared to, you know, a lot lower number, £8. Yeah, it makes a big difference, right? So we kind of also came across with Google's own products, and this is one way that they kind of put themselves at the front of these queues, but they had a thing called EBDA, which was their kind of answer to header bidding. So they would, it's called enhanced dynamic bid allocation. And again, they would just say like, yeah, well, really, if you just get rid of all the floor prices, we'll just tell you what the optimum price to sell at is. And the problem with that was that they are the person buying most of the inventory. They're selling it on a click. They would just, again, be able to prioritize themselves versus everybody else because they're like, yeah, just trust me, bro. This is definitely the best price for this inventory. And that's where this kind of problem has come for publishers, is that they're kind of getting bamboozled by a lot of people who claim to know more than them, and they like claim to be their friend and that they're doing them a favor by telling them this information. But really, at Condé Nast, we had a whole team of people who were looking at like data across the websites, whether it be data for what gets the most readers or what gets the most money. And really that team would be way better placed to have more data that we can show them through Alchemy, that they can then make their own decisions on what that floor price might be. And like you said as well, like to day part it at certain types of the day, and then just other ways around chopping that up for themselves, rather than somebody who has a vested interest in taking as much out of the middle, making that decision for them.
Absolutely. To give you a real world example, now let's say, I'm selling my shoes on eBay, right? And so I would go onto eBay advertise the shoes as being up for sale. I would say the minimum amount of money that I'm willing to accept for this is, let's say, £50, right? If, now assume, and I'm not saying eBay does this, but assume a scenario where eBay were to come back to me and say, okay, you wanted a minimum of £50 for your shoes, here's 60, right? And that's what's happening to the publisher. I, as the seller, am happy that I've found a price that's above my floor price of £50. So I'm happy to give it away for a price of £60. But what I'm not aware of was how many different people were interested in buying that shoes and how much they really bid to acquire that shoes. And how truthful is eBay being here in telling me that Choli was willing to pay £100, somebody else was willing to pay £120, but eBay may just tell me that here's £60 because the minimum you wanted was £50. And I'm not saying eBay does this, it's just an example. But so that's what's happening in legacy ad exchanges, where they conduct an auction, they say, here's the floor bid price, and here's how much is the best response. Now, the publisher does not know what the responses were, how much they were valued at, and whether the response that the publisher received was indeed the highest response. And what makes matters worse is some of these ad exchanges do also happen to have other demand side operations where they buy the ad inventory as well. So if I am buying the ad inventory myself and I'm competing against various other buyers, and we all go into an auction on a platform that's controlled by me, how do we then prove that the platform is not partial to an in-house buyer, right? So these raise pertinent questions about transparency, and not just transparency, but again, the truthfulness of the data that we're being transparent about, which is where auditability comes in.
Yeah, and I think that's quite an interesting point to make, especially when you think about the kind of current costs of that ad tech that people are using. Means that we were talking about supply path optimization, but if an advertiser is willing to spend £1 and the publisher is only seeing a bid of 35 cents or whatever it might be, that is all taken out of the middle. And the bit that's landing on page is that much lower bid, but really the advertiser was willing to pay £1, but
exactly,
you're only seeing 35 cents. So because we have very transparent fees as well as transparent data, it means that the price that we're landing on page is the majority of that bid. So it's the 3-8% that we're taking, but that means that, minimum of 92% is going to the publisher, but the page price is that 92%, right?
So exactly. And all of this data, again, is available through our Ads Explorer, where the community see the Ads Explorer, and the publishers would have enhanced data using the APIs that they have access to, where they can actually see on a per impression level, what was the floor bid price? What were the different responses that they received? What was the average price of that response? And how far was the floor bid price from the average response? And how does that correlate to the time of the day, the content type, the type of user, various other factors, which will allow the publishers to scientifically make a decision as to where that floor bid price has to be. So maybe they can raise the floor bid price in order to maximize their revenue based on certain parameters, or they can say, I'm going to keep that floor bid price there and reduce the number of ads, or I'm going to achieve a balance between the number of ads that I show to people and the flow bid price that I want to achieve for each of these ad inventory. So that then becomes their decision based on the data that they can get via Alchemy Ad Exchange.
And this is where we've seen our win rates quite high when we're compared to other legacy ad tech, because we're like putting 92% of that value back to the publisher, and that's coming through in the bid. It means that we're outbidding people that much more often. So
absolutely. You know, there are legacy ad exchanges which charge quite a large transaction fees. And even if the advertiser or the DSP is willing to pay a certain amount of money, and there is a huge drop because of those high transaction fees, the amount of money that is sent as part of that bid response to the publisher is fairly low. And that low response, as a result of a high transaction fees, is what results in a lower win rate. And since we are minimizing that transaction fees to 3 to 8%, more money is sent to the publisher, and hence the win rates that we can achieve are far higher than legacy ad exchanges.
Yeah, and just to take it back to that kind of bid density piece, it shows that the real like bid density is not where they think it is or where they're saying it is. It's actually way higher than that because there's the ad tech fees being taken in between.
Absolutely.
So by us kind of showing that more of that data, but also that actual closer to the real price that is being willing to be paid by an advertiser, that means that we can help those publishers kind of push that that bid density up, or that floor price, or whatever it might be.
Absolutely. And I've always been asked this question as to how Alchemy is able to achieve operational efficiency despite charging a lower transaction fees. And that's where the whole power of the Web3 technology comes into picture, where, you know, we use our own decentralized network of validators, where the auctions are conducted, the auction results are using consensus verified, and those verified auction results are then notified on the distributed ledger, which is then surfaced using the Ads Explorer, all of which is available using APIs to both the advertisers and to the publishers. So all of this is just happening like a well-oiled machinery. There aren't many people that are involved in operating this. And because there is very definite fees that we can achieve because of the decentralized network of validators, because of the processing power that they provide us, because of the fact that we have the ads token, which then fuels everything, all of that leads to us being able to operate this efficiently within 3 to 8% of the value of that ad inventory.
Yeah, and I think that kind of takes us quite nicely onto the kind of automation piece, because although it's called programmatic advertising, some of it is done programmatically because people set up a price beforehand and all the rest of it. It's still not as automated as it could be. And by being more decentralized, it becomes more automated.
Exactly.
But then we are also building our own DSP, or as we're calling it, a demand side agent.
That's true. That actually brings me to the second part. I started off with the optimizations on the supply path, the supply side. Now it brings us to the second part, which is optimizations that we have brought in place on the demand side. Now, typically, as a recap to part one, what happens is that on the demand side, the ad exchange integrates with the DSP. The DSP is used by the media agencies. The media agencies are contracted by the advertisers in order to run those campaigns. The DSPs also interact with the DMPs. They also interact with ID providers, and they also interact with third-party verification softwares and partners. So this is traditionally what happens on the demand side of the ad ecosystem. Now, what we have seen is that the same level of transparency and auditability can actually make things very efficient on the demand side as well. That is, the demand side platform and the media agencies who use those platforms are now, via the Alchemy Ad Exchange, able to get 100% data about how much of their ad spend is actually going to the publishers. So there is nothing that is hidden from them. If they were to say that here is a dollar that I'm bidding to show my ad on that particular website, that data is notarized. They can see that is the amount of money that is taken by the ad exchange, and then the transaction fees is extracted out of that, and the rest is passed on to the publisher. So they have complete visibility of how much of their ad spend is actually reaching the publisher, thereby leading to more of their money going to the publisher in actually showing their ads to the users. Also, because they have visibility of where that Flowbit price was and where they bid where they sent their response, they will also be able to get an average value of the responses that have been received by the exchange. While they will not have a granular view of which other DSP bid, how much did they bid on each of these impressions, that's sensitive data. But what they will have access to is an average price over time. And that can be used by DSPs to determine how best to modify their bidding strategy in order to achieve a higher win rate. And they will achieve a higher win rate even without any of this optimization, because more of their money is being sent to the publisher, which means that those bids will be won because they are far higher than any other bid responses that the publisher will receive from others. And hence, it is very likely that there will be a higher win rate, but there can be a further optimization where the DSPs can actually modify their bidding strategies based on the data that we provide them.
Yeah, I think it's interesting that the lost data, like when you don't win the bid, is not used in your strategy. I always think of it as kind of like trying to play Battleship. So you kind of go around like spraying and praying, seeing what happens, and then you've got a hit. And then you know from that you can work your way up in little increments
or something like that.
But you're not necessarily starting from the bottom, working your way up, and then kind of going very systematically through it. It's very much a kind of sporadic kind of pricing strategy.
Absolutely. And also the links in the supply chain on the demand side are also not very optimized. Like, for example, we have the DSPs, then we have the ID providers, we have the third-party verification systems, we have the data management platform. And there's a lot of stickiness that's involved in the media agencies using the DSPs to set up those campaigns, because there's a very steep learning curve in setting up these campaigns, in operating these campaigns, in ensuring that the bidding strategies are set at the right level, in to ensure that, you know, the campaign impressions are spaced optimally. We have what we call ad fatigue, where if I'm shown the same Grammarly ad on every YouTube video that I watch, I'm very unlikely to buy Grammarly. But hey, that's ad fatigue for you. So there are various parameters that need to be controlled via the ad campaign, which is not the most intuitive way to set up a campaign. So there's a lot of stickiness in the operations on the demand side. So what we have done is, number one, we have optimized the supply, the supply path, the supply chain on the demand side, by integrating the ID provision, the ID provider, the DMP, and the DSP. So how we have done that is, we are now building what we refer to as a demand side agent, which is an AI-powered DSP with a lot of other features. Number one, we are removing the stickiness of a DSP, a traditional DSP, by ensuring that we use ChatGPT-like prompts that people can use in order to set up campaigns. So very simply, anybody can go on to this tool and then they can say, here's my product, I'm advertising a soft drink. And here's the age group of people that I want to target. Here's the geography that I want to target. I have so much of money to spend over a month. Can you actually set up an ad campaign? And here are my creatives. Can you set up an ad campaign? And those prompts, those ChatGPT-like prompts, because now everybody is learning, you know, the prompt engineering is the next biggest thing. So everybody in some way or form will be trained to provide these prompts. And we want to use that knowledge that people have acquired in ingesting those prompts and to be able to set up those campaigns on our DSA. What this also does is that it removes the need for somebody sitting on a desk 24/7 trying to help people to set up a campaign and optimize it based on various parameters. So all of that has gone away. It's AI powered. We are able to do that using the AI engine that we have built. That's number one. Number two is that once the campaign has been built, there is also a lot of stickiness and operational inefficiency that is involved in getting information about the delivery of the campaign and analytics based on that delivery of the campaign. So if I want to know how has my ad budget been spent over the last 3 months, has it been spent all within the first 15 days? Or how is that actually paced? How can I actually modify the way in which my ad budget is being spent? All of that reporting can be pulled using the AI agent, where people can say, can you give me an impression report which contains data A, B, and C for this particular period in a plain English sentence, and they will be able to get that report rather than contacting somebody who then generates a CSV file and then applies certain filtering to get the information or the report that people want.
Yeah, I think it's interesting when you look at our competitors in that space. I think of people like Google, who obviously have the most popular, I think pretty much every agency has it, Google Ad Manager, and the Trade Desk. Like, they all have a whole university online around how to use their products, right? So that tells you that they're quite complex. There's a lot of different like parameters that you have to create and use to like set up a campaign, track a campaign, like see what the performance of that campaign was. And it makes me think of that phrase that you always say, that the error is in between the keyboard and the chair.
And
it basically allows for a lot of mistakes to happen, right? Exactly. I think there was actually a case quite recently, I think it was PubMatic, I want to say, but don't quote me on that. And I think they spent something like $70 million or something in the space of like a weekend because somebody put too many zeros on a campaign, or might have put the impressions in where the dollars was meant to go or something like that, right? And that they did eventually have to like par it down and say, look, obviously that wasn't what we were really trying to spend here. But they were putting in CPMs of something like $40,000 CPM. So it's things like that where there's a lot of margin for error, but also there's that kind of sunken cost for media agencies. They spent so long using them and upskilling their team that they don't feel like they can move to different solutions. But this kind of makes it a lot easier for them to do that because they don't have to go and learn a whole new thing. They just talk to a chatbot, right? So it's like, I think Ben says that AI will replace UI. And I think that's probably the area where we'll see it happen the most, is things that are quite technical to use and involve a lot of training to use will actually just be replaced by a chatbot kind of style AI.
Absolutely. And not only are we using AI for the campaign setup and reporting, there's another very important aspect of use of AI within our DSA, which is real-time change in bidding strategies. We spoke about data being available to publishers and DSPs. Now, you can only get the power of that data if you were to take concrete actions based on that data. And our AI engine is built to determine, to actually extract the business intelligence reports out of that data. So the AI engine would be able to say, okay, this campaign targets people in this particular segment. And if I have a bid request object at this time of the day, based on the data that I have, it is very likely that I will be able to achieve a win rate of, let's say, 80% or 50% or whatever that is, if I were to bid above this particular line. And that decision and modification of the bid strategy within the campaign can be done in real time based on the data that is ingested and those decisions being made. And that, I think, is a game changer, where we can then say, here's a budget. I want this budget to last for 90 days, and I want to achieve a win rate of 50% or 80% on this particular segment during this time of the day. That is going to be the way the campaigns would be set up. rather than saying, you know, here's how many impressions I want you to deliver. Here's the minimum price that I want you to bid at. Here's the maximum price. I don't want you to go above this price. I only want you to go above this price for this particular segment. They are very, very complicated setup processes in traditional DSPs, which can completely be taken away by the real-time modification of bidding strategies based on data. And that is going to be powered by AI.
Yeah, I think it's that thing of like, there's currently not enough data to go around, but then if you do have a lot of data, you have to be able to comb through that. You have to be able to make intelligent decisions based on that information. And that is still currently done by HI, human intelligence, I guess. But there's like only a certain amount that can really achieve, especially when you're talking about really large data sets. There's not really a way for those people to kind of visualize that data, comb through that data, make informed decisions on that data, whereas having, you know, an AI able to A/B test certain things and then say, okay, that's actually the better option, I'm going to start doing that more often. I think we always used to optimize campaigns, and I think the first time I ever did it, so I started off working in AdOps, and the way we used to do it is you get a spreadsheet of like all of the websites that the campaign was running on, and it's like, okay, these ones have got zero clicks, get rid of all of those. And then you might be like, okay, well, we want to get a click-through rate of 0.1%. So anything below that, get rid of it. And then it might be, okay, the viewability on these sites is too low, so get rid of those. But it's quite a manual process if a person is doing it, and you have to make assumptions to begin with, right? It's like, well, the data set might be too small on those sites that have got zero clicks. They might have only shown like 3 impressions, but if it had 100,000 impressions, you might get a click-through rate of 5% or something. You might see way outsized gains on that, but you would never know that because you've just eliminated it straight away off a very rudimentary kind of set of data, and it's not as informed as you'd like it to be. But like you said, by using AI to do that optimization and do that kind of ad ops role, it can do multiple things all at once in a way that you can't do as a human, because setting up that A/B test is like you having to do it twice, and most people are human and they don't want to do the work twice. They want the results of doing it twice without having to do it twice, and this kind of allows them to do that. It gives them kind of the ability of like 100 ad ops people in kind of one person using the DSA.
Absolutely. We are also building other features within the DSA, like, for example, the ability to target users with advertisements based on their wallet IDs. So people, the wallet IDs of wallets that are connected to these publishers' websites are sent via the bid object, and we use them to actually determine what is the best ad campaign to show to these particular users. So we are removing the need for other links in the supply chain, such as ID providers or data management platforms, because that's all going to come under the umbrella of the DSA. So more hops in the supply chain being eliminated, along with optimizing each of these functionalities within the DSA.
Yeah, and just a sort of side quest on that, I think there's also the kind of nice piece of, we currently talk about getting consent to basically drop a load of cookies and take data from people. And most people, because it's existed for so long, and they just want to see the content, they're not bothered about the consent form or unchecking 150 boxes for all those third-party vendors. By flipping it into people connecting their wallet and actually giving them control of that data,
they're
kind of able to give permission rather than consent. And that kind of creates a whole different paradigm for how people's data is leveraged, but also how they interact with advertising. I always think that if I was, you know, to be paid for like selling my data effectively, and the adverts that I see are more relevant to me and I'm more likely to buy those products, or they might be for new brands that are like brands that I already use or whatever it might be, that is a much better experience for most people than the current system of essentially like, okay, yeah, go away, and then just getting bombarded with a load of ads, some of which may be relevant, some which aren't, from data that has been taken from you rather than, you know, you've given somebody permission. But it also makes it quite hard for you to control who is using that data where for what. And I think that under GDPR especially, I think that it means that the consent format is not GDPR compliant really, although the EU courts haven't necessarily caught up with that. But that's the way it seems to me really, is that we have a lot of data privacy laws around PII data and how people are targeted through advertising, but there's nobody is talking about flipping that from consent into a permission-based system, because that to me is probably the only way that GDPR can actually be upheld.
Absolutely. It's interesting you bring up GDPR, because I was just speaking to one of my colleagues who works in the privacy industry, and what he was telling me was that the biggest issue with ICO here in the UK is that they have the responsibility and the power to enforce these regulations, but they don't have the bandwidth and the human power to actually ensure that they go after the defaulters and make them correct their actions in whatever way, either by imposing fines or just warning them to cease and desist. But that's a bigger problem. The regulation itself is very good in spirit, but we need a more strict way of enforcing compliance to the regulation. And I think that is where we can make a real difference by moving from consent to actually getting the user to permit the use of their data and what actions can be taken based on that data.
Yeah, I mean, it's probably a lab tech all in itself, but I always think of it as like it's a very big stick kind of in a glass box as a sort of deterrent, but is never actually like wielded at anybody. I mean, we've seen quite big companies get away with quite a lot already. So I thought it was quite interesting. This kind of most ironic thing was that the IAB's own consent form didn't comply to GDPR. So it's like they can't get it right. Nobody can really. I think that's kind of the problem that exists.
Yeah, it's very similar to, you know, when you're driving in the UK and you have a speed camera about 100 meters away, you see a big board which says speed camera ahead. And you can really see people slowing down just as they see that hoarding. So it's like that, you know, it's not a preventative action. It's more like a, okay, we inform you that here's what you need to do. But if you don't, there's not much we can do.
Yeah, I think that's probably a good analogy. And I think the kind of summary of kind of what we're saying about the way that we've built Alchemy is that it really gives that transparency of data to kind of everybody in the supply chain at the moment. Like once we do get that Web3 wallet integration, that'll include users as well. But it really is that transparency of data and the auditability of that data and the pricing being fairer, that is really a massive paradigm shift from what we talked about before to what we're trying to build. But the kind of endpoints and the usability looks the same for the people who are in that ecosystem, right?
Absolutely. So yes, I look forward to integrating with many, many more partners and taking their feedback on optimizing it. We're open to more feedback and suggestion as we integrate with people. And I look forward to that journey.
Yeah, it's going to be great to see kind of other businesses building on top of Alchemy, I think, and
absolutely
using all of that data for good and to like create better products and more efficiencies within the whole of the sort of ad tech world.
Absolutely. And I don't think we've even realized the power that that data will have to different businesses. There can be different business models that can be built using the data that we are surfacing. Maybe we can, based on the feedback that we receive, provide a richer set of APIs that people can use to build their business models on it. So yeah, it's we're just at the tip of the iceberg. There's a lot more to be revealed.
And yeah, even within that kind of DSA platform, it's each agency will effectively have its own piece of artificial intelligence to make those decisions on what they're buying, why they buy it. Kind of that will become their differentiator, because at the moment they're all kind of using the same systems in quite similar ways. But this will really allow them to kind of drill down into a lot of data, different pricing models, different formats, and using artificial intelligence to kind of make that better for them and for their clients.
Yes, we have spent many, many hours in front of a whiteboard trying to make this enterprise grade, because there are privacy concerns with AI, use of AI as well. There are concerns with confidentiality, where data from one of the media houses should not be made available to the others. So there are various aspects that we are keeping in mind when we are designing and building the AI-powered DSA.
Right. Well, I think that probably wraps that up. And yeah, we'll be kind of taking deeper dives into the DSA later on as well. We've covered quite a lot of the features of it, but I think we'll probably end up doing another one when we launch it kind of into the wild so that people can understand kind of what it is and why it's important.
And the MVP launch of the DSA isn't too far away. We will be inviting some community members to help during the testing of these test campaigns that will go live via the DSA. Stay tuned for all of that and more.
Yeah, so keep your eyes peeled on Discord. There'll probably be a link in there for you guys to check that out. Thanks, everyone.
Thank you.